You're listening to Chainlink, the crypto news podcast with your host, Joshua Roomsburg. Follow and subscribe today.
Welcome to the Chainlink podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Roomsburg. Today's episode is sponsored by Crescite, a Web3 solution for faith-based institutions. Our guest today is Eddie Cullen, the founder and CEO of Crescite. Welcome to the show.
Josh, thanks for having me. Super excited to talk about Crescite and dive right into it.
Okay, so how long have you thought of the concept for Crescite? Is this something you put together this year or something you've been thinking for a year or two now?
So I actually came up with it right when I finished the race for New York City mayor. So I actually came out of the race, really wanted to build something for faith-based institutions and ESG investments, and started this in May 2021. Okay. So we primarily have been in stealth for about almost, I guess, a year and a half now, you know, and now we're starting to come out a little bit more publicly on some of the work that we're doing right now.
Okay. So how does Crescite tie into the city of New York? Or what would it be specifically a region of the state?
So I think for us, you know, right now, as an example, we're working on a project to create fractional ownership around real estate for homelessness and for property. So that's one example that we're working with New York City. You know, I think, blockchain can do wonders for a lot of different things. And I think faith-based institutions, ESG investments, and that community creates a natural synergy. And one of those projects is that we're working with in New York is around homelessness. So that's one project. You know, otherwise, I've just lived here my whole life, you know, and have had a great community built. You know, my co-founder is actually from New York as well. So we built our camaraderie here. So the ties are, I think, just being, you know, someone from the city, but also, you know, working on projects, I think, to uplift communities too as well.
For fractionalizing assets, is there a reason why you tied in the religious aspect?
So, you know, I would say for this one, I think we have two parts of our community. I think one of it is working with faith-based institutions, you know, ranging from Fordham University as a Jesuit university to working with ESG investment related opportunities. You know, I think at times both of those communities have synergistic energy. So to answer your question, I think this more leans on the ESG investment side of things, you know, and the person that we're working with, his name's Shams the Baron. You know, he's a great guy. He's known in New York as the homeless hero. He's created a great rapport with the city, you know, ranging from elected officials to, you know, businessmen and folks. And he's got immersed into the blockchain community. And we've developed a friendship over time. So I think this is a little bit more in the ESG investment. You know, I think providing ownership to those who have never had an opportunity to get ownership, you know, whether that's, you know, getting shares within a property, possibly buying you know, their own apartment. But, you know, affordable housing in New York City is pretty rough right now. It's probably between $3,000 and $5,000 for a one bedroom. We're trying to find ways to use blockchain to eliminate administrative costs, provide opportunities. And we think fractional ownership of assets can actually do that.
Two things I want to ask you. Can you explain what ESG is for people who may not have heard the term?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ESG is just really kind of a focus on, you know, having a triple bottom line, right? You know, I like to use the word ESG as, you know, when we're investing in a project, we're not only looking at high returns, but does it have a social element to it? So the building that we're working with in New York City, you know, that we're hoping to launch by next year, we're working through some of the technology, you know, actually, you know, putting a down payment on a property or a lot of land here in New York. Okay. And basically that land would not only have a building of affordable housing for those that need it the most, it's also going to provide a real return to investors. So I always think of ESG as, hey, this means you're going to get a high return on your investment, but there's some sort of social element. You know, you're not just, you know, investing in a consumer product that might not have impact on the community. You know, but ESG is really, for me, it can range from a water infrastructure project in Haiti all the way to a building for affordable housing for homelessness in New York. And we think that synergy around those projects can create a natural community. But we still want to get returns for our investors, right? I think most people hear ESG and doing good, that you can't profit and do well at the same time, you know, and I think you can do both. You know, I think you can kind of bring those worlds together. And we think blockchain can help eliminate some of those administrative costs within ESG investments. You know, it can help provide a platform for fractional ownership that has never happened before. Maybe you only want to buy shares that are worth $100 rather than $100,000. And that could have never happened before.
Right. Now with fractionalizing, you said this could be potentially apartment complex?
Correct. Yeah. At least for New York City to start, right? Like we're going to start with an apartment complex.
So if you fractionalize that, you're saying if the property was, say, $500,000 or $1 million, $2 million, you'd fractionalize that into how many participants do you think you would have per complex?
So let's give an example, right? I think there's something called the voucher system here in the United States where, you know, homeless and underserved communities may get $2,000 for their $3,000 in rent per month, right? You know, and the city will administrate that check. However, sometimes it takes 6 months for that check to get to landlords. Whereas with using blockchain and using, you know, technology that's fractional ownership, we can more or less do that in real time. And then let's just take a tenant as an example. Let's say there's I don't want to say homeless. Maybe it's a low income community. Maybe it is someone who's homeless. You know, they've never got a chance to buy something before because there's barriers to entry on how expensive it is to buy an apartment. So maybe they're coming in and every month as they're paying their rent, you know, they can actually accrue shares within that property. So then, you know, let's say 10 years down the line, we decide to sell that property for 10x of its value. They can share in that profit. You know, they can share in the profit of that property.
People who actually lived in that apartment complex?
Correct. Yes. So, you know, someone to live in that apartment complex. And look, you know, we're still figuring out what that smart contract will actually do, right? Like, what's the hold period? Do you have to live in the building for 3 or 4 years, 10 years to see those profits? Right. You know, how can you earn more shares over time? But for the first time, I like to think as real estate now, we're entering what's more of a ownership revolution. You know, people getting, you know, opportunities to purchase assets that they never had before. And that could never have been done, you know, up until this point, because I think blockchain enables that, you know, and I think, you know, that's a huge opportunity for folks. You know, I think of myself, I come from a very middle income family. My dad was a plumber, you know, superintendent. He didn't have $100,000 to spend on real estate for generational wealth. He might've had 1,000, he might've had $1,500. And that's what this provides as an opportunity.
Now with fractionalizing that, would it be as an NFT?
So yeah, it's the same premise, right? You know, I do like the concept that NFTs are really a proof of concept for smart contracts. Yeah. So, you know,
I
think
that's what when I think of an NFT, the big thing right now for NFTs is the pictures and images. But when I think of the potential for an NFT, I think the music industry, I think fractionalizing ownership. And that's with you speaking about this apartment complex, that's the first thing that comes to my mind would be an NFT concept that would tie into it.
Absolutely. And that's a great perspective, right? You know, think about NFTs, you know, think about when you take pictures on your phone, right? When you delete a picture on your phone, it's like, oh man, I don't want to delete a picture on my phone. Like that's like, you know, blasphemy. I never want to do that. So I do think the NFT concept of pictures and videos is kind of cool from a collectible standpoint. But what really excites me is the tokenization of assets. Like I think real estate, I think agriculture and farming, I think real-time settlement. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's an NFT concept just for shares within a building. You know, and I think we'll just get, you know, over time, we'll evolve how we use our wallets, how we hold these assets. Hopefully we see a little bit more regulation on how we can, you know, purchase these NFTs for, you know, real estate type models. But yeah, that's what really excites me. But you're spot on. Yeah. NFTs in a real estate sort of way, you know, more or less.
Okay. The next thing I wanted to ask is you mentioned Fordham University. Could you explain how you guys tie into that anymore?
Yeah. So my co-founder, his name's Carl Kill. He's a great guy. He was actually Mike Bloomberg's general counsel for 20 years. And I met him through the Fordham community about 10 years ago. So he was at Fordham. I graduated from Fordham University. I helped build a lot of different programs over the time and built a number of good relationships. And I always said to myself, look, I think we're early in the technology of blockchain. And not only did I want to implement, you know, some good tech for my alma mater, but I think using or working with the school as an example to use almost as a labs, so to speak, Yeah. So we teamed up with Ed Cull from Fordham University as the athletic director, and a good friend of ours now, Joey Moyer, who's the director of ticketing. And we said, what are some ways that maybe we could test blockchain technology? So we have a we have an exclusive relationship over time. Working with the university, I think, is always good because you'll get real feedback in real time. And they're a university based in the Bronx. Famous alums, I'm trying to think of. Denzel Washington went to Fordham, you know, and there's a few others, but mostly, you know, a good school, you know, not because we only have a good relationship with them, but a good opportunity to test things. And we actually have immersed, it was really funny, you know, when we first started the company, we hopped on the phone with Ed Cull, and we were able to sign that contract after about a month because he was eager to learn about this as well. Because since I look at blockchain in terms of a 9-inning baseball game, I feel like we're only in the top of the first right now. You know, we still have a good ways to go. Yeah.
So how do you mentioned ticketing? How else do the athletics tie into it? Or would it be starting with the ticketing, blockchain based ticketing? Is that your idea for that?
Yeah. So we've done a couple of tests, right? Which have been cool. You know, one of the famous alumni of Fordham is actually Vince Lombardi. So when the Los Angeles Rams,
let me stop you there. The Green Bay Packers coach?
Yep, the Green Bay Packers coach. Vince Lombardi, the Lombardi Trophy, Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, he went to Fordham University, and you know, that's where he was on what's called the Seven Blocks of Granite. So offensive line, you know, played football there, got into coaching, and then the Los Angeles Rams made the Super Bowl this year. And the Los Angeles Rams, you know, ended up beating the Bengals in the Super Bowl. But the Los Angeles Rams were named after the Fordham Rams. In the 1930s, the Cleveland Browns were the Cleveland Rams, and the coach loved Vince Lombardi and the Seven Blocks of Granite. And we did a little test run, which was fascinating. And I'll share this with you is we said, well, let's do an NFT collection around Vince Lombardi. And we put that out there for the public. And we actually ended up getting about 1,000 people from the Fordham community come back to us and say, wow, what's Web3? What's blockchain? And when we thought, hey, let's put NFTs out there for athletics, we actually found out that people wanted to be onboarded with wallets. They wanted to be onboarded with what we're calling an identity domain. We think Fordham is going to end up being the first enterprise organization in the United States to have an enterprise Web3 identity as an NFT. So like EddieCullen.Fordham or Josh.Fordham, you know, that'll almost be your replacement of the, you know, your 40 to 50, you know, character identity within your wallet. So we've been using Fordham as a test location, but also as a close ally. And that has led, which we believed, to our work with New York City, to our work with other organizations. And we've been working with them for I guess about a year and a half now, you know, from the start.
Would your user domains tie into the XDC blockchain?
Yes.
Would them be on top?
Yes. So we were going to announce this, in a couple of weeks, but maybe I can just announce it here. You know, we actually did do it on XDC. So it's the first top level domain for an enterprise organization in the United States. You know, we like to think we got there first. We know blockchain.com ended up getting there with unstoppable domains where they had .blockchain. But we actually feel that we got .fordham completed, and we did it on XDC. We did the top level rooted domain. We built the smart contract and we did it. And we're working, you know, slowly but surely, because we want to make sure everything's done well and correct, you know, and that's important when we're working with universities and students and schools. But, that'll be your identity for transaction, right? You know, when you go buy a ticket at Fordham, you'll use your XDC top level domain, you know, as your identifier. And that identity domain is a smart contract as an NFT, rooted as an NFT. And then, you know, that you're sending, you know, I think it's okay. You know, I deal in blockchain a lot, and I think sending, you know, transactions with these long character addresses is okay for me, but it's not going to be okay for everybody, right? Like, you might make an error typing in the wrong, you know, number, right? Or the wrong letter.
Or another thing that always gets me nervous is, like, I'm in blockchain every day. I'm 100% crypto on blockchain, but I even get nervous when I copy and paste an address that when I click the back button to minimize my keyboard, I don't erase one of the last letters, and then I got to figure out what I just deleted. Like, that's something even me, an experienced veteran in this industry, it still makes me nervous. So the biggest thing is for one of my guests that was on the show a couple weeks ago, they mentioned the mom and pops. That's what we got to get to where the mom and pops understand this technology, and it's something that they can convert and understand and move forward with in these types of domain names, then would help people a lot instead of just a bunch of numbers and characters.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's why I'm very close to using the word Web3, because I think, like I said, we're still in the top of the first. I don't know if you remember the mid-90s when you had to download all different sorts of things just to listen to a basketball game, right? Like you had to download six different things, the client, the server, all of this, you know, and I liken that to IP protocols of the day, right? If you had to tell me I had to go to 192.31.21 to get to Amazon.com, you're crazy, right? You know, we need the mom and pops.
That's hilarious that you say that, because back when I created my first website, I didn't know how to get a domain name. So my first website, when I was a music artist in high school, so I'd upload my music to that website and I didn't have a domain name. It was just a bunch of numbers. So I'd go to school and I'd pass a paper out that just had a bunch of numbers on it. People were looking at me crazy, like, what is this? But now the advancement in technology, like I see in Web2, you have to have a .com. Like, that's standard for doing business in this industry. And when we move to Web3, these domain names are going to be prevalent in the industry, is what I feel.
Right. And that was one of the big things for me working with XDC that I was really excited about, because there was kind of this, you know, the schools that we work with are also international. They're not all based in the US. You know, some are based in Europe, you know, some are based in South America. But, you know, I like the public private aspects of the network. And when I start thinking of identity domains, for me, this is just like, you know, talking to your Web2 days too, as well, is like, the logic of this is, okay, I make a transaction. At some point, I deal with blockchain all the time as well too. You know, for this to really hit institutional levels of capital, I feel like people are going to want to know who they're engaging with, but not everybody is going to be able to, like you said, copy and paste a 40 character address. You know, oh man, did I hit the wrong one? Did I just send my capital to JP Morgan or Wells Fargo, or did I send it to like Joe in Minnesota? Right? like that's what, you know, we want to be careful of. And I think Fordham's been great on leading that threshold of leadership for, hey, let's do some of this testing. Cause we put an NFT out for Lombardi and found out right away very quickly that people were like, well, what about identity? And we're like, wow, we thought about that, but we, you know, the good entrepreneur in me did it, you know, with the customer development was, wow, okay, the community wants this. So let's build this smart contract, have Eddie Cullen.Fordham, you know, Carl.Fordham. And then there's that multi-signature process. Not only is the wallet making the verification, but the server systems within Fordham is making that verification. So then you have, and we've tied it to the @fordham.edu email address. So I liken this to those early days of Facebook where, you know, you had to have a college email, you know, to get registered on Facebook. That's kind of the approach we're taking with identity domains. And the hope is, which you know, I'm excited to share is, you know, working with XDC, we actually have a patent pending on it. You know, we put a patent in earlier this year to really work toward it. We feel like we've achieved those goals. And it's exciting, meaning like,
would that be exclusively to Fordham, or would that be, you could use that on any college campus?
Yeah, it's great that you said that. Not only college campuses, but we're also looking at banks and institutions. So imagine dot JP Morgan or dot Wells Fargo or dot Boston College. You know, am I being a little bit of a dreamer? Has the market gotten there yet? Probably not, but I think we are getting there. You know, JP Morgan made their first real kind of public DeFi transaction, you know, I think a couple of weeks ago. I think it was in Singapore. I could be wrong where it actually occurred. But we're seeing larger institutions gravitate to that. So my hope is, yes, you know, you hop it on your wallet, you know, whether it's XDC Pay, MetaMask, whatever, and it's, you know, I'm talking to Josh dot, you know, Chainlink, right? Or, you know, it's Eddie dot Fordham, and we're making that transaction, and we don't have to worry about the copy and paste of 40 characters, right?
You know,
so
yeah, that's exciting. So man, you just spit out so much information. This is beautiful. Now with XDC, are you looking at Fordham University, or you mentioned Boston College? Are you looking at these two universities as an onboarding process to where you could bring new users into the network?
I think new users, but I think one thing for me, right? So I'm actually getting my certificate in Jesuit studies at Boston College. So the reason I got hooked up with Boston College, and look, we have a good relationship with a number of universities worldwide.
Okay.
What I'm learning with Web3 and blockchain, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, is I think the project is going to be defined by the community that you're dealing with. You know, I think, you know, in terms of working with Fordham, we realized that, okay, athletics, we realized identity was somewhere where we wanted to start there. I'm in a class right now at Boston College called the History of Jesuits. So the Jesuits have been around for quite some time. They have 300 universities worldwide, you know, a few in the United States, ranging from Georgetown to Boston College to Gonzaga to Xavier. It's kind of a network of schools. For Boston College, for me, I don't know if it was necessarily about users, as it was more of, wow, you know what could be cool is the Jesuits have had 300 years of history. Let me see if I can create a tokenization project where students could take a piece of history, tokenize it in some sort of way, and then put it on this History of Jesuits sort of website. So it's more educational, I think, with BC, and more of kind of a personal thing, right? Meaning I'm in the class, I'm putting up this History of Jesuits site. But guess what? My hope and goal over time is that our Fordham community then engages with the BC community or Fordham community. I'm going down for even some more continued studies at Georgetown on international policy and business relations in January. You know, one thing for me is continuing my education and infusing it with the technology of blockchain, because we're so early yet. You know, if we're so early, can we define that through different lens? So I think the answer is yes to your question, but the way we're going to grow the user base is going to be different. So look at the three projects we talked about, right? Like you have the affordable housing fractional ownership project. Yeah. You have the identity domain project with Fordham. And then the Boston College one is more of kind of a personal one, right? Where it's like, okay, let's bring in students from universities and schools to maybe submit educational content around tokenized history.
Now, with that tokenized history, what types of information or assets are you looking at tokenizing?
So the first one I did, which I think is pretty cool. So the Jesuits have been around for quite some time. They have a pretty cool history. You know, they've been involved in almost every major historical event you can think of over the last, you know, I think they were founded in 1540, if I remember correctly. Okay. And from there until now, you know, ranging from working with the Portuguese Empire to, you know, being suppressed. You know, they're actually suppressed and then restored. You know, they founded Georgetown in 1789 to, you know, the even just, you know, the last president, I think his, you know, his the person who said the prayer was a Jesuit, right? So for me, it was, you know, working with these, you know, I thought building a natural network in blockchain could come from these schools, similar to like a Facebook approach, but just with a Catholic, you know, spin on it a little bit.
Yeah.
That we could say, okay, let's get these communities working together, you know, and we can not only work with students, let's work with the alumni, let's work with the faculty, and let's grow that at a time. And then it would lead to other projects. And that's what's kind of happened.
Now that brings us to the next aspect is this is looking to be a decentralized autonomous organization for 2.3 billion. Oh man, I stuttered on that one. 2.3 billion Christians. How does the Christian network tie into Crescite?
Yeah, you got it. Crescite, man. Right. And Crescite, you know, I think we'll start with that, right? Crescite means to grow. You know, if you know the famous picture from the Sistine Chapel where you see Adam touches God's hand, there's like two fingers there.
Yeah.
That's the moment of, you know, et Crescite, right? And et, you know, so to increase and multiply. So Genesis, you know, and the Genesis block in crypto and blockchain that we deal with, it was a nice play on that. So when we talk about Christianity, which is why we say faith-based, you know, and we don't say it's Catholicism, right? Like I'm personally Catholic, but that doesn't mean that I don't want to work with Christian organizations, right? And yeah. Other faiths. And we wanted to make it a little bit more inclusive for a number of reasons. One, you know, there was something written by Pope Francis called the Laudato Si encyclical, where he actually invites collaboration among everybody. You know, and it's a phrase that I even ran on when I ran for mayor. I called it inclusive capitalism. You know, it's like capitalism 2.0. We can go make a lot of money, but also have a triple bottom line where we could actually make impact. So when we start talking about, you know, other denominations of Christianity, you know, we haven't, you know, can't say it publicly yet, but we are working on a couple of projects with other denominations of faith that we hope to unveil within probably first quarter of 2023. But same premise as before, right? You know, listen, you know, I think, you know, within the space, we got to do a lot of listening. Cause I think as you've probably run into, people hear the word crypto, like, oh my gosh, right? Like that's, what are you guys doing? You know, but we try to break it down, right? Like it's Web3, it's blockchain, it's good technology, it's software. And what happened with Web2 is I think faith-based organizations actually got a little bit behind. And I'm hoping with Web3, we can be a little bit either ahead or just on the same level as kind of, you know, consumer-facing products or other lines of business.
Okay. Now, you also have the Crescite Foundation. What will the Crescite Foundation do for the network, for the community?
So for me, it's more for just voting on projects. You know, early on, you know, obviously, you know, I always think of, you know, other successful projects that have had foundations to help guide them in the early stages. Yeah. My hope is, you know, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, we have enough projects that the community is voting on things that they want to see, right? And the foundation will be that mechanism to enable that those voting capacities, so to speak. So let me give you an example. You know, let's say we do onboard, you know, a number of different Christian denominations. We have schools in Europe. We have banks in Australia. You know, it's going to be pretty hard for them to meet in person. But right. Let's say, you know, and this is one of my hopes and dreams is that, you know, God forbid we see a disaster happen, right? Whether that's an earthquake in Haiti, whether that's something like, you know, Hurricane Sandy or Hurricane Katrina, you know, or I remember the tsunami in Japan years ago, some sort of natural disaster, that the foundation can come together and make votes and say, you know what, let's work on that project. Let's help individuals over there. So the foundation will just, you know, and we're looking to stand it up probably early next year. You know, we've been on a very, very slowly but surely, you know, grind here a little bit in a good way. But that's the hope, but that's what it will do, right? That it'll be an organization that can just vote and work on projects. Well, in these early days, you know, I'm working with a few people just to curate them ourselves, right? You know, the Affordable Housing Project, Fordham, you know,
thinking about is on a bigger scope with that, with the voting, say a natural disaster did happen. Would you guys be able to fractionalize housing in these type of areas that are affected by natural disasters?
Absolutely, right? You know, you think of...
Is that something that does that sound too far-fetched, or is that something that you could really see?
No, I could see that happening, right? And I'm hoping that, you know, we can do things faster when we respond to certain things, right? I even think of veterans in the United States, right? You know, there's a couple organizations where they might not have an opportunity to get housing for themselves. You know, maybe a community comes to a vote and says, well, let's build 100 houses for veterans within the United States. And we're going to do that collectively. Now, let's work with the organization we work with. Our company is named Lion Fox. That's the organization that Shams has. Well, let's maybe work with Lion Fox and Fordham, and let's build a house for, you know, let's build 100 houses for veterans, and Fordham's going to provide education, you know, and hopefully help those folks.
That would be cool, right?
Right. So that's the theory, you know, and the vision. You know, obviously, we're trying to do it one step at a time, just to be. We're trying to be as respectful as we can of these larger institutions. And as you know, man, mentioning crypto or any of these sort of buzzwords, you know, sometimes can, I don't want to scare people or freak people out, but we try to do a good job of explaining the tech. Like XDC was built for trade finance. It can eliminate costs, X, Y, and Z, you know, and here's why it's beneficial for you. But yeah, the dream is that let's bring together schools, affordable housing complexes, municipalities to answer real world problems that we couldn't have solved otherwise.
Okay. And yeah, back to what you were just saying, the word cryptocurrency or the word crypto NFTs, this goes over a lot of people's heads who are not in the industry. So to bring these people in and teach them as we move forward as an industry as a whole, that's one of the main goals moving forward.
Yeah, education is a big part of this, right? You know, I always laugh and use this as an analogy. Do you remember in 2000 when we had Y2K? Yep. Computers were going to explode because we couldn't have the number 2000 on it, right? Like, that was a real thing, you know, and that's what we got to be mindful of, that people think of, you know, I watch so many clips of like the internet's going to go away, you know, internet is going to go down. Look, the .com crash happened and everyone said, the internet's over. you know, and I would say that it didn't go away.
No, so. It survived and got more powerful and kept growing. So is there anything else that we haven't discussed on this podcast that you would like to tell the community?
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do here is, you know, look, I think the United States market can be a leader in blockchain and can really kind of benefit from real world adoption, real world projects. You know, for me, That was always a big thing, right? You know, real world applications of this technology, whether that's fractional ownership in real estate to help homelessness and veterans, to working with a university for an identity to make sure that the ticketing system could be a little bit cheaper for them, right? And save overhead within their department, to working in a class and, you know, maybe submitting a project using tokenization technology rather than using PowerPoint or using something, right? Don't use PowerPoint. Don't use Word documents. Use tokenization as a way to show your history, right? So for me, you know, I think the last points I would say is for a community, what we're trying to build is real world adoption, real world utility, real world implementation, and do it around faith-based institutions that I think, I think can be trustworthy. And then ESG investments, so where we can actually make real impact, but also see real profits and see real adoption and real opportunity. In building the community, we're trying to bring those collective interests together.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Eddie. I appreciate you being on the show today.
No, I really appreciate it, Josh. This is a great time. I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, me as well. I look forward to the future for Cressete, and I hope to have you on again soon. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love that.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.